A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, hi, and welcome. I am your host, Emma Gunnar Wardner, and in my nearly 20-year career as a beauty and health writer, I have interviewed a lot of people. Supermodels, entrepreneurs, authors, celebrities, and doctors. And many of these conversations had a real impact on me, and I'd come away feeling inspired, excited, informed, and really empowered. And at the back of my mind, I'd always think, I wish I could just publish the tape so people could really feel that conversation. Well, on this podcast, you get to feel the conversation. I talk with experts, guests, and a few friends who I hope will inspire, inform, and empower you, and maybe also challenge you, whether you're looking for self-help, self-improvement, beauty advice, health insights, business know-how, or just some good old-fashioned life advice and a bit of a laugh. It's all here. Welcome to the show. Welcome, welcome. It's so good to have you here. Thank you for joining me. On this episode of The Emma Gunn Show, I am joined by Kate Arnell, and I am so happy to have been able to record this episode because since doing the sustainability habit in 26 Habits, which, if you are not familiar, was the 2 week make or break a habit every 2 weeks for 26 weeks, i.e., for the whole year of 2018. Gosh, I should really think of a pithier way to say that, shouldn't I? I have been wanting to get somebody on the podcast to really talk about how to implement the habits and lifestyle choices and hacks, for want of a better word, to enable us all to live maybe whether it's waste-free, just more sustainability, making better choices. But one of the things is, you have been asking me for this kind of episode for a long time since that habit, in actual fact. But one of the issues I found is that sometimes this sustainability, this living a less wasteful life, seems inaccessible, or it seems as if you'd have to make so many choices that inevitably the habit would not stick. And so every now and again, I think, right, I'm going to go down this path again, and I just can't find a comfortable place. I can't find someone who I think will come on and actually give practical, useful tips that you, my most excellent listeners, can apply, implement, and really use and try out, really just experiment with, until I came across Kate Arnell. Kate Arnell is a TV presenter turned eco-blogger, and she has got a brilliant, very easy to read, very easy to understand plan for living a rubbish-free lifestyle based on these 7 R's, these principles. So there are 7 R's, which she's going to explain in this episode, about how to live a more waste-free life. But this is the reason why I like Kate. Now, when I started reading her blog, when I started looking at her book, when I started looking at all of her information, I knew I liked her. You just get a real sense that she's just, she's a fun, likable person. But the thing that I think I liked the most before I met her was the fact that she says, okay, I've called it zero waste, but I'm just saying, cut it down. Let's just get as close to your zero as you can get. So she's already acknowledged the fact that not everyone can compost, not everybody has the recycling resources available, not everybody has a farmer's market on their doorstep. But even within that, there are things that you can do. And I think that's why I really, really liked Kate. And then I met her, and you're here on the show. We met minutes before we hit record, and I just felt like I'd made a new mate. She is great. And I do think that she's really opened my eyes up to the little changes that I can make, the little things I can do to inform myself, whether it's to recycle more responsibly, whether it's to actually generate less waste. And actually, one of the most interesting things about this conversation, and I won't give too much away because I want Kate to tell you, is how living a waste-free lifestyle has actually made her, has actually strengthened her boundaries and her ability to say no and to be able to say what she does want, which, as you know, if you're a regular listener, you know that's right up my street. So I will obviously put the links to Kate and everything that we discuss in the show notes, except all the film references I keep throwing at her, which didn't land, but there we go. But I'll put all of the links in the show notes, which can be found wherever it is that you are streaming and downloading this episode. But for now, it's my huge pleasure to welcome Kate Arnell onto The Emma Gunn Show. Kate Arnell, welcome to The Emma Gunn Show.
Thanks for having me.
I'm delighted to have you on the show because I feel as though we can have a very wide-ranging conversation about something that I think we all know we need to be doing more of, i.e. living more sustainably, but perhaps don't necessarily know the ways to apply that way of living. And you live it, right?
Yeah. I'm living it large.
I mean, talk about go big or go home. You really have gone big.
Yeah, but I think it was something that just resonated with me. I was always a bit of a, I don't really like the term eco or eco geek or whatever, but definitely growing up, I was that strange kid who would pester my mum in the supermarket to buy the organic version of something, as opposed or the eco cleaning product off the shelf instead. Mm. And I think for me, it just felt like, you know, why wouldn't you a little bit? And I did do a personality test many, many years ago, and it turned out I'm a very values-driven person. So I think for me, I'm quite lucky in that it doesn't feel like it's hard work. It feels like it's something I want to do. And very little or probably none of it is done out of guilt. Like, I don't feel like I've, you know, I'm doing this because I'm a terrible person otherwise. I feel very much like I want to do it.
And I think I would have already said this in the introduction, I've already told you mere moments ago, but I, for the 26 Habits in 2018, I did How to Live More Sustainably. And even actually in December of last year when I did the Christmas pods, I was really surprised. I started researching like the top five ways you can contribute to society, and the one that came out top every single time was recycle. And I didn't realise it was that impactful. Shame on me. So I guess what I want to find out from you, because your story is that you live a, would you call it a sustainable lifestyle?
I would just call it a low waste lifestyle or a zero waste lifestyle, but for me the term zero waste isn't an absolute. It still means I create waste. It's a heck of a lot less than it used to be, and it's a very different kind of waste. So sadly, where I live at the moment, I don't have any sort of access to be able to compost any food scraps. So I'd say 95% of what's in my small paper bag of trash is basically food scraps that I can't compost in our sort of small flat without any outside space. And in my previous place, I did have a little worm bin and stuff, so, which I talk about in the book. But basically, I'm literally I feel like I'm going to have to apologise. I've just had a baby. I've got baby brain, and the question has gone from my mind.
Would you call it a sustainable...
A sustainable lifestyle? I don't know. I struggle with it sometimes because the term sustainable means different things to different people. And for me, it'll mean one thing, and to someone else, it'll mean something completely different. So for me, I just sort of call it a zero waste lifestyle or a low waste lifestyle. But as a sort of addition to that, I do things like, you know, use reusable energy or probably don't travel as much as, I'm just a bit of a homebody though, to be fair.
But that's the thing, I think with lots of things, even like the diet industry is a great one for this. Like, we start using a word as a descriptor, but it means different things to different people. So I say sustainable because it feels like a sort of coverall.
A catchall,
for, I recycle, I don't, I mean, all of those things. But actually what you do in the book, which is fantastic, is you talk about the different ways in which you can do this, and it isn't just about recycling. And we'll get to that later. But would you mind, for our listeners, our most excellent listeners, would you be able to talk about how, I mean, you've said that you took this personality test and you're very, what was the...
Values-driven.
But what was it that actually prompted you to... you read something that made you think, actually, this is how I want to live my life moving forward, and then really ran with it.
So initially, like I said before, I was very much into choosing the eco option or choosing organic as much as possible. But it often felt that it was all still so heavily packaged in single-use disposable packaging, mostly plastic. And I would get really frustrated with the label on the back saying not currently recycled. And just think, why have they chosen that piece of plastic? They could have chosen something else. So that was my initial frustration, but I didn't really stop to think that I could do anything about it. It felt very much out of my hands. And then my husband came home one day with a copy of, I think it was the Metro or the Evening Standard, and in there was an article.
Which for international listeners is a free newspaper that's basically given out on public transport.
Exactly. And he pointed out this family who were being featured, who lived in California, a family of four, and they produced a jar of waste a year.
Wait, how big is the jar?
It's about a litre size jar. So I don't know if you can picture like a sort of Kilner jar that you might put pasta in or something in your kitchen. It was, you know, a small jar.
A year?
For a year. And that was very impactful, that picture of the family of four. And they looked really like normal, like you could be friends with them. They weren't living in a cabin in the woods or off grid or anything. They just looked like a lovely, normal, friendly family. And they were producing this one jar of waste. And there was just something about reading the article, a lot of it sort of made sense to me. I was like, oh yeah, why not? I could try that. And then I got the flu for 2 weeks. I remember lying in bed in the few moments that I was awake, sort of just struggling to stay alive. I was thinking, oh, maybe, what was the title of that book again? I might look it up. And the first day I was well again, I went to Richmond, which is a very leafy suburb of London, and walked past a charity shop, which I hardly ever used to go into, and I thought, well, I'll just pop in, and a copy of the book that had been featured in this newspaper article called Zero Waste Home was on the shelf. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's right there. And my memory sort of makes me remember it as I was just floated towards the book.
Celestial light.
Yeah, it was a bit celestial, yeah. And I picked it up and I thought, great, I'll just buy it then. Yeah. So I took it home and read it within a few days. And I think so much of it was just very easy, simple swaps that I felt I could do. And it just kind of made me realise I could sort of take control of some of the stuff in life that I wasn't that happy about when it came to things like packaging and the amount of waste we were sending out. You know, we produced two large black bin liners a fortnight, was it? Or a week? I can't remember. But, you know, a lot for just a couple.
Yeah. And I think when I think about making these decisions and making these choices, I'm going to be really honest and say it feels like in order to live this way, I have to make my life a little bit harder for the greater good. So making a bit more effort, spending a bit more time recycling and separating my my rubbish, maybe going somewhere, taking a container and filling it up rather than just ordering, you know, like hand soap for the bathroom rather than just buying another bottle of it, going out and actually refilling it. And it feels like, for the greater good, those smaller, those inconveniences.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like,
I think a lot of people, before they start, think, oh my goodness, this is going to be a huge inconvenience. Oh, can I even be bothered? And what I've found personally is, yes, at the beginning, it can be a bit of a, okay, right, I'm going to have to make an effort. But I think we've all gotten into the habit of taking our mobile phone with us when we leave the house. It's not even something we think about. So remembering a water bottle or remembering a cloth bag, you can tag it onto a habit that you already have. And I read the book by Gretchen Rubin. What was it called?
She's been on the podcast twice. There's Happier. There's the Happier podcast. There's the Four Tendencies.
No, I think it was the but it was one talking about the habits and how it was a really good idea to tag on any new habits to current habits. I was like, that's a really great idea. So I always had this mantra when I leave the house, that's phone, wallet, keys. Those are the three things I know I can survive out of the house with, whatever else happens.
That's what I say when I wake up slightly hungover. Phone, wallet, keys.
Okay, great. Trousers, excellent. That's a bonus. And I thought, well, why don't I just tag on, you know, reusable water bottle or cloth bag or whatever it is to that little mantra. So it's phone, wallet, keys, water bottle. Okay, great, I can do that. And then it became something that I didn't even have to think about. And it just, that's what I leave the house with. So there is definitely a bit of a shift in habit changes in the beginning. And But once you've got that down, it's like, great, I don't even have to think about it. And then secondly, I think a lot of people think that a package-free or a refill option is going to be a compromise. Mm. But I've had so many friends and family and just people in general saying, it's an upgrade. That product is actually really lovely to use. And I found it's actually cheaper to buy it as a refill. Or I really love that I don't have to, if I take a bar of soap or a shampoo bar or whatever it is when I'm traveling, I don't even need to worry about it going through security and that little like bag of liquids that you have to puff around with. You know, there are little things that it might seem inconvenient at first, but actually, I wouldn't, for me, if it wasn't a bit of an upgrade or it wasn't enjoyable, I probably wouldn't keep doing it.
Yeah, I think that's so true about the compromise. So how, I mean, did you sort of, was it a line in the sand moment of, to your husband, partner, was it, right, I'm going to, this is how we're living from now on, and did you make massive changes? Was it like a movie montage?
A little bit, things
went flying out of the house?
And, yes.
Right,
which
okay.
I wouldn't recommend anyone else do. I learned the hard way. So I think I came down and announced to my husband that, you know, I think we're going to try and reduce our packaging waste and, you know, you don't have to do anything, but I'm going to just go and do the grocery shopping and, you know, I'm going to take a few containers with me and, you know, see how it goes. And he was, I think, generally fine with that until I started switching out the cleaning products because he's a very neat and tidy person.
What did you switch out the cleaning products for, incidentally?
What did I, in the early days, I think it was just repairing down what we were using. So instead of having a separate sort of oven cleaner, surface cleaner, bathroom cleaner, or, you know, all the different bottles that are quite sort of strong smelling and used to give me a bit of a headache, we sort of pared it down to sort of white vinegar and bicarbonate of soda and I can't remember what else, maybe some eco-friendly washing up liquid. So simplifying it and making it much more natural. And I think it was a bit of a shift for us all, for both of us actually, because you associate strong cleaning smells with a place being clean.
Yes, yeah.
And to not have that, but to have sort of some sort of mild vinegar smell that does go away eventually after like half an hour, or essential oils, or, you know, no smell sometimes because the products you're using aren't heavily scented. It was a bit strange at first, but actually my sense of smell has improved so much since cutting those things out. It's crazy. So when I now walk past something that's been heavily cleaned, I can really smell it.
I mean, I would assume that would be a compromise, switching out your insert household name, very strong cleaning product here, for white vinegar. I would assume that there'd be a lot more elbow grease.
Not really. I'm no domestic goddess at all. I think it depends on, I guess, your own standards and how diligent you want somewhere to like sort of look sparkling clean, but I think it hasn't felt like a compromise at all personally, and as like I said, I feel like my health has definitely improved as a result. And you start to think, gosh, what other sort of things are like leaching random hormone disrupting chemicals or whatever it is in your home. But yeah, removing cleaning products was actually, it's good. And to be fair, my husband at first found it a bit of a struggle. And I remember him saying to me, I'm going to fire you on this. You've taken it to the limit here. And now he is the first person to start mentioning how amazing vinegar is to anyone who comes around the house. It's like, God, have you seen how great it is on the dishwasher? Like, you use it as a rinse aid, and then sometimes you use it just to clean the dishwasher on a rinse.
The Arnells are banging on about vinegar again.
I feel like, darling, we don't want to be those people. Just stop talking about vinegar.
Okay, so one thing that you do, because you've written a book about all of this, and listeners, I was saying to Kate beforehand that ever since I did the sustainability habit as part of 26 Habits, I've been wanting to speak to somebody who can really make this seem accessible and not seem like an affluent person's game, or not seem like a massive compromise, or like I need to make my life harder.
Yeah.
And I feel like your book does it. I was gripped within the first, honestly, and it's so well laid out, but that's another thing. Readers, I'm sure, I'll put the link in the show notes and readers can find out for themselves. But I think one of the fundamental pillars of it, seven pillars if they are, maybe, are the seven R's of zero waste. Yeah. And apologies if it sounds like I'm whistling. I am wearing my Invisalign. And
I've got I hadn't even noticed.
I've got that old man whistle, you know. Have you ever watched, what is it, American Dad? Not that one.
Oh, No, I haven't.
And there's the old guy who whistles, and my Invisalign makes me do that.
Yeah.
Sorry, side note.
All the dogs in the area are suddenly pricked ears.
So yes, on my S's you might hear a sharp whistle.
That's all right.
Whistle.
It's tuneful.
The 7 R's of zero waste.
Yeah.
And would you be able to talk me through them? Because they're explained so beautifully in the book, but what I think is really great about them is it's literally like, here's where you start and here's where you finish.
Yes, it's an order. So they're not just random R's in any old which way.
Yeah.
And actually, the book that I originally read has the 5 R's of zero waste. Mm. And that's basically what most people know the 5 R's as. But there were two that I was really keen to add in. So I'll tell you which ones they are as we go.
Yeah.
But you start by refusing. Mm-hmm. So, like saying no to strangers, say no to strange bits of plastic that are thrust at you throughout the day. And it doesn't have to just be plastic, it can be anything. Mm. So a free sample of something, anything that is in a disposable and you sort of think, do I really need that? Am I taking this just because I feel like I should?
Yes.
So if people try and get you whilst you're walking down the street, give you a flyer, give you a sample of something, and it's actually not something you want, then just refuse it.
Mm.
And I think by refusing things, it sends a clear message to companies and brands that, you know, people aren't maybe interested in having those disposable items in their life. It can feel, I think, especially as a Brit, feel a little awkward saying no to things because we're so sort of
polite
conscious and not wanting to offend anyone. So I think finding your own way that works for you, either use a bit of humour or just be really, really super nice.
No,
or you can have, thanks, I'm good. Or, I don't know, or we're trying to go paperless or anything that feels not preachy or like, because the person's just doing their job. They don't know that you're trying to avoid any disposables. So I think always be nice and try and understand where they're coming from. So that's refuse.
And also, maybe I should let Kate go through all the hours, but I want to ask you about this because one thing I found really interesting in the book is you said that actually this first R, the refuse, has helped you develop a more assertive nature because of having to figure out, well, if refusing is going to be one of my key pillars, I have to figure out a way that I can do that aligns with my values of being nice.
Yes, because I'm naturally, I wouldn't say shy, but I really am a bit of a people pleaser, I think, and I don't like sort of making people feel bad or whatever. So I did have to find a way to say, you know what, I'm good. I sort of do the slight, almost Jedi-like hand wave.
These are not the droids you are.
When I'm doing it, and it seems to add a bit of, I don't know, character to me saying, no, I'm good, thanks, not today. Or, I think do whatever suits your personality type.
Yes. Yeah. It just made me think about when I did a half marathon and, you know, you wear your name on your shirt and people cheer you on and as you're going around, and every time somebody said my name I did a prayer. That's not helping with the running. Why am I suddenly doing this prayer thing? So just a very gentle like, no thank you.
Yeah.
And even, but not just about waste or products or anything, just generally, do you think it just shellacked that ability?
Yes, it's given me the confidence to say, you know, that's not for me, or I don't want to do that. But again, in a way that feels, that sits well with me.
I have a good reason.
Yeah, and I think generally, as a whole, the zero waste lifestyle for me has very much helped me as a person as well, and sort of added different layers to my life. It's so strange, and it sounds really, really weird to say that, you know, it's just by reducing the amount of waste, it has actually led on to feeling more confident, feeling generally healthier, and I don't know, finding that thing in life that makes you sing a little bit. Yeah.
Is it because you stand for something?
I think that's what it is, yeah. Going back to that values-driven personality type. I think it's because I used to work as a TV presenter back in the day, and it got to a point.
I can so see that.
After about 10 years of, I just wasn't great at raising my profile. But I always got really great feedback on jobs, and, you know, it was all good. But it got to a point where I was sort of having meeting after meeting about sort of doing entertainment shows, and work was just getting a bit slow. And I was like, you know what? I actually really don't care that much about who wins the X Factor anymore, or I, in my spare time, I was sort of reading up on like things like zero waste, or you know, things that were naturally interesting to me, subjects that were naturally interesting to me. So yeah, I think as a whole, the lifestyles definitely resonated with me.
It's very interesting. I worked on celebrity magazines. Or,
did you?
Yeah. Well, I did the beauty pages, but and also did celebrity interviews. But there was somebody who worked there who, after I think 10 years of working there, went and joined the police.
Oh, really?
Because she said, I didn't know her very well. She sort of was, this all happened as I was joining. But she just said, I've spent so much time looking at pictures of celebrities and fact-checking weddings, and I need to contribute to society.
Yes, yeah, exactly. That's so true.
So how interesting.
Yeah.
So yes, so we've got refuse, and how that is, that how that has really strengthened your boundaries, not just within this zero waste lifestyle, but just generally.
Just in life, yeah.
Number two,
refuse and then reduce. Mm-hmm. So you refuse what you don't need, and you reduce what you do need. Mm-hmm. As I think we are in a bit of an age of excess, and especially like in the digital age as well, we can easily access so many things at the click of a button. So it's about sort of just basically reducing what you do need, which means, do you need like 8 different but almost exactly the same white t-shirts in your wardrobe? Maybe you're only wearing 3 of them.
one of the other 26 habits was me reducing my wardrobe.
Really?
I reduced down from 26 white t-shirts.
26, that's like a record.
I know, it was excessive.
Amazing. So how did that go, by the way?
Brilliantly. One of the best things ever, because it started in the wardrobe and filtered into every aspect of my life.
Yeah, you're
like, but we'll come on to the minimalism thing, because that's also a thing with you.
It gets
you
a little bit addictive, doesn't it?
So with the reduce, and you talked about having a clear out, was there an element of really overstripping in order to try and fit the identity of what you thought was zero waste?
Yes, felt like, especially in the beginning. And I probably cleared out a little bit too much. I sort of struggled through thinking, I'm really regretting getting rid of that rolling pin, because right now I'd like to make some pastry. So there was a definite thing of, and again, I think I say this in the book, you don't have to be a minimalist in order to sort of be sustainable or zero waste. You have to do what works for you and find your balance. But I think the issue is that a lot of people have stuff just sitting there not being used. And that's very different to having stuff sitting there being enjoyed and loved, and as Marie Kondo says, sparking joy. And I've definitely got family members who, their houses are filled with knickknacks and photographs, and it brings them so much joy, and they love them. Every time they walk past that photo on the wall, they're like, oh, do you remember that time? So I don't think minimalism or reducing that far has to be a given. I think it's about finding the balance that works for you. And I definitely over cleared out in the early days. And I think I was trying to fit this mold of what I thought zero waste should be. And now I'm very sort of at peace with what works for me. And again, it's different for everyone. I think there's this real thing of people feeling that they have to adhere to what it should, like a label, like what it something should be. But scrap all of that, and you do you.
Well, Gretchen, last time I had Gretchen on the show, we talked about decluttering.
Yeah.
And she says it doesn't mean, like, the first hurdle or the first mistake you're going to make is trying to be someone that you're not. So if you like knickknacks, have knickknacks around, just don't have all of them.
Or don't have them just stored in boxes that you never get appreciated. Get them out, put them on display, and then maybe weed a few out that you're like, oh no, I'm not that fussed about that one anymore, I could pass it along. And I think, again, when it comes to reducing what you do already have, there's this sort of mixed message of, hey, don't waste anything, etc. But then you're being encouraged to have a bit of a clear out. But I think you've got to remember that you are potentially freeing up an item onto the secondhand market that somebody else would really love to have or need, or it's that exact thing they've been looking for. So I think try not to feel too guilty about getting rid of things, just try and do it consciously and in a way that you feel like it's actually going to a good home. So sell it on eBay instead of just dumping it at a random charity shop.
And also with the reduce thing, I think we're also being encouraged quite a lot to bulk buy.
Yeah.
Like there's so many buy one, get one free, or offers like 3 for the price of 2, things like that. And now I make a conscious effort when I see those, because I do my online shopping.
Yeah.
To see, well, what am I actually saving? And in many cases, it really is something like 40p.
Oh, really?
But it's a high... So, for example, like a big bag of dishwasher tablets.
Yeah.
And you think, actually, they're quite expensive. Oh, I can get two for a reduced price. And you realise that actually it's really not that much
it's,
of a saving.
It's minimal. And they've probably marked something else up.
Maybe, yeah.
So, yeah. You are encouraged to buy far more than we need, I think.
And it's part of the reduce, just saying... I'll just get what we need.
Yeah, and I think, again, with zero waste, if you are able to buy something from a refill shop or, you know, go and buy something from Loose, from bulk, you can buy just what you need, because there are so... I don't know how many people will agree with this, but I've always had, like, jars of spices sitting in the cupboard from one recipe, and they've been sitting there for about 5 years. Yeah. And then when I get to use them, I'm like, oh, I can use that thing in the recipe. But had I just bought the exact amount for that recipe that I needed, 10 grams, 15 grams, you know, those spices would have been just used up, and they wouldn't be sitting there in my cupboard sort of going to waste.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so it is about buying just what you need. And again, it's a learning curve. And I think, you know, ebbs and flows. And we definitely go through different phases in life. Yeah. Like, I've just become a new mother. And especially in the early days, I definitely bought things that I'm looking back on now going, what was I thinking? But it was all so much chaos. And I was like, oh, I don't know what I'm doing. And the convenience factor as well. You know, I needed things like nursing bras or whatever, you know, and to spend time trying to find that secondhand, or I'd change size, my shoes didn't fit anymore, all of these things that can happen. I was like, oh God, and, you know, I can barely leave the house with the baby. I just, you know what, I'm just going to order something. But I think it's about choosing better when you can. Yeah. So I tried to buy things in organic cotton or from a brand that has better credentials.
Yes, totally. And then there is reuse.
Yeah, so refuse, reduce, reuse. Mm. So that's very much about reusing what you already have, getting creative, thinking outside the box.
Meaning
you might be looking at some, I don't know, an ornament or a jar or something you've got in your cupboard that you're not really using, and maybe that could be used as a to-go coffee cup or to store some leftovers in your fridge. I think there's definitely a way to get creative with reusing things. I wish I could think of more examples on the spot, but I'm sure some will pop into my head.
It used to be, I mean, 30, 40 years ago, I think we were a lot more inventive.
Yeah.
And I remember, and I still sort of make fun of my mum now, that I remember going to a school picnic or like on a school excursion or something. Yeah. And we all sat down with our packed lunches, and some of the girls pulled out Tupperware and were clicking, and they had crudité and stuff in them.
Yeah.
And I had an old ice cream tub with an elastic band.
Yes, there you go.
But, and I wonder whether, and I'm curious about this, that then made me sort of stand out as being a bit basic. Bitch, you just had a crappy, didn't have a proper lunchbox.
How do you feel as an adult now? Do you feel like it affected you?
I have a whole drawer of Tupperware. It definitely affected me. Only because, yeah, well, but I think there is an obsession. Is there an obsession? I feel like my mum used to knit my Barbie clothes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. She could probably have like her own Etsy shop these days.
And so there was, and it wasn't a thing. It was a really lovely thing that you made do. And if you had something, you would... You know, you'd learn a skill. Like, I learned how to crochet and knit and sew. Amazing. When I was a kid. And I don't know whether those skills, because I don't have children and I don't really hang around children that much, I don't know if that's really passed on. But I do think that you would be a little bit more, well, this will work for that.
Yeah.
Whereas somewhere along the line came this idea of perfection.
Yeah, and convenience as well. As in, like, oh, yeah, sure, I'll take it in a bag. You know, I forgot to bring my own.
Yeah.
Definitely. So I think it's definitely encouraged me to be a bit more creative thinking. There was one scenario where I think we were going to my mother's place and she asked us to pick up some sausages from the butchers en route, and I didn't have a container, but I had a water bottle. So I was like, hey, butcher, could you try and put 8 sausages into this bottle? And he looked at me and was like, okay, he took the challenge.
Wait, a glass water bottle?
Not a glass one, a metal one. a stainless steel water bottle, like drinking bottle, you know, for on the go. But it's all I had on me. Yeah, and he loved the challenge. Okay. And then his colleagues all came round and they're like, oh, mate, no, you can get another one in there. And they started singing to the tune of Message in a Bottle, Sausage in a Bottle, as we were leaving. So, you know, you got to think on your feet a little bit sometimes. Okay.
I can't even imagine getting them in without some sort of distress to the sausage.
No, it was fine. Okay. He knew what he was doing.
Did he just oil them up?
No.
But how did you get them out? Was it just a bit of a
wiggle and a shake? And her house was only around the corner, so they didn't have far to travel. But I thought, yeah, you know what, we can do this.
So in that scenario, what's the would a bit of paper not have just been all right?
Yeah, sure. I think you do what you feel comfortable with. But I just had it in my head. I was like, damn, I've got this bottle. It's empty and it's clean. And I know we could fit the right amount in there. Mm-hmm. And it just, again, it was one of those moments of like, well, I could either shy away from it a little bit, which is my natural instinct, and just kind of go, yeah, just a little bit of paper's fine. Mm. Or I could try and own it and maybe we could have some fun with this and see what happens. But yeah, they had a great time. They liked the challenge. We got the sausages home without any packaging.
And I bet they tasted delicious.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, this is a really interesting one, repair. And the reason why I say it's really repair, so this is the four, so refuse, reduce, reuse, repair, is because, and I will double check my facts and put the link in the show notes.
Okay.
So I'm saying this, but I actually haven't done my fact checking at this point because I only heard it recently. A friend told me that a very high, Nike.
Okay.
That they have a lifetime guarantee.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And that if your Nike outfit, the seam goes or something, it will be repaired.
Amazing.
It's part of the guarantee of so it's actually a better investment to
again,
I will double check that because I've heard that secondhand and it might be an urban myth or it might be a case of it's been exaggerated.
Or was it Nike or was it another brand?
Exactly. But so I'll put the link in the show notes for listeners, but the repair thing is very, very interesting in the way that you execute it.
Yeah, and this is one of the R's that I added in because I think it's often included in reuse, but I wanted to give it its own little sort of segment because I feel so we're so quick to just buy the new or a working version without even considering repairing something first. So by repairing something, we're keeping it sort of loved for longer and out of landfill. And I think it helps people invest in good quality to begin with. And also by repairing something, you're kind of creating this little relationship with the thing, which sounds a bit strange, but I always like to use the example of our toaster, actually, because our toaster is handmade in the UK and it was slightly more expensive than, you know, a regular toaster from the supermarket shelf. But it comes with it's one of the few ones that can be repaired, and I think it comes with a guarantee. So, and it has the name of the person who made it underneath. Aww. Liam is on the bottom of our toaster.
Aww.
Yeah, so by investing in products that come either with like free repairs for life or a guarantee that, you know, should anything go wrong, they'll fix it, actually makes you sort of look after the product and have a bit more respect for it. So there's
a lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Brand of denim jeans called Nudie Jeans, and they do free repairs for life. My husband just dropped off a pair of his the other day to get repaired. And they're also made from organic cotton, which is great. And they then refurbish any that can be repaired that the original person owner didn't want, and you can buy secondhand repaired jeans off the shelf from them as well. Yeah, so I think there's a lot to be said for repairing and closing the loop, or companies taking things back and taking ownership, because I think so much of it is put on the customer to sort of work out what to do with something at the end of its life. So our Le Creuset pot, the sort of stock, you know, the casserole pot, we'd had it for about 5 or 6 years, and some of the enamel, something was coming off it, and there was a tiny bit of rust on it or something. So I got in contact with them and said, hi, I don't have a receipt, but here's the situation, here are a few photos, I'm happy to pay for it to be repaired. So I sent it back to them. They in the end sent us a new one because they found that it couldn't be repaired, but that's a company taking ownership of it. I think, again, with clothes and things, like, unless you change shape or size or, you know, it just doesn't serve a purpose for you anymore, it's crazy that we sort of just take something that's in perfectly good working order, apart from maybe a small hole, and chuck it out.
It's very true. And I remember a friend saying to me years ago, buy cheap, buy twice.
Yes.
And I totally live by that. Yeah. Like, I will, as much as I love sales shopping, I will only sales shop
for a quality product.
Exactly. And now I sort of have a bit of a limit. Like, I used to, again, the white t-shirt thing. If I had time to kill between appointments in London, I'd pop into New Look or one of the high street fashion shops and buy a white t-shirt. Apparently
once every fortnight.
But I probably only wore about three of them ever. But it was just, it was just that thing of it sort of, it killed time.
It's exciting.
White, it was clean anyway. So yes, repair. And you're absolutely right. Like, I think you talked about winter coats.
Yeah,
because I have always, I definitely come from a family and we've worn our stuff to death, so to speak. So you wear it, you don't just wear it once and then never wear it again. But I like the way you talk about, well, I've had my winter coat for a while. If my lining rips, then at the end of the season in the summer, I go and I take it and I have it repaired and I have new lining put in.
Yeah.
And it's as good as new.
Yeah, exactly. Sadly, post-pregnancy, it's a bit of a squeeze, that coat right now, but but I will get back into it. But yeah, I got the lining repaired because I loved it so much. It was originally a secondhand purchase. And it's just such good quality. And I was like, I'm never going to find another coat like this. And also, I don't know, maybe it's a bit sentimental, but, you know, it's been to New York with me. I've taken it, you know, not around the world, not that I'm a jet setter, but to New York, basically. And I just loved it. So, I thought, well, why not get the lining repaired and choose a slightly different colour that makes it feel maybe a bit different. I think repairing is something we should always think to do before we suddenly just go and get a new one. I also think it encourages you, I don't know if I just said this, but to buy something that can be repaired, because so many things have built-in obsolescence that they don't want you to repair it. They want you to buy the brand new one because that's how that company's going to make the most money. Whereas I think they're coming around now, and I think they're starting to realise that actually offering a repair service as part of the product, it just builds really good customer trust.
It does, doesn't it? And then this is the fifth one. And I was surprised that it was down so low. And also, it probably is the one that was the biggest education piece for me in all of it. So please explain the fifth R.
The fifth R. So once you've refused, reduced, reused, repaired, you can then
recycle.
I was just checking that was the right one. That's what I wanted to say. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm questioning myself. Yeah, recycle. I think recycling is often the first thought for most people at the end of the packaging life or product life. But so much of what we think is being recycled isn't actually being recycled. And we've seen, you know, many TV shows now sort of expose the fact that, you know, our recyclables, especially things like plastic, aren't really making it to the recycling centre where they're actually going to get turned into something useful. So I think by refusing first and then reducing, reusing, repairing, it actually means that you recycle less. And actually, that's kind of the goal. We see so many messages out there saying, recycle more, that's the answer. But actually, we should be recycling less and then making sure that things we do recycle actually get recycled. And I think there is a bit of a hierarchy when it comes to what you you know, can recycle. Things like metal, glass are much more highly recyclable and they don't lose their quality when they are recycled. They can keep going again and again and again. So if you've got the option to buy something in plastic or in a glass jar, choose a glass jar, because firstly you could probably reuse it for something, and if not, you'll know it'll get recycled. Paper again, I think, can be recycled up to something like 8 times before it loses its paperiness. Efficacy, exactly. And then, you know, at the end of its life, it's not going to end up in the the ocean, in, you know, with a sea turtle eating it. And
well, one thing I wondered when I was reading the book is you must have had to have unpicked and sort of followed the, you know, followed the breadcrumbs. Was there anything that was really shocking to you when you sort of started exploring things like recycling? And you talk about in the book plastics being found in the South Pacific, in the most remote...
That was quite shocking, actually. Yeah, one of the most remote parts of the world where there's almost no human activity, I think. And so you've got these giant albatross with filled stomachs, filled with plastic. And you just think, God, that's mad. And, you know, it's well-known brands. You know, you can see them on the plastic caps or whatever. Oh. You just think, God, that's so sad. So things like that were very eye-opening. It's funny, I think I've gotten to a point now, because I've been doing it for quite a while, it's not so much of it is sort of like shocking anymore, although I think recently somebody was saying how there's so much like plastic fibres in the air or something. At that point I was like, okay, there's not a lot I can do about that personally, but it is very much everywhere, and I think we're only just starting to realise just how everywhere, especially plastic, is. I think there's often an argument for like, oh, you know, the production of some plastic is less of a carbon footprint than using a paper alternative, for example. But again, in the whole like zero waste goggles, you could refuse the paper if need be. You know, you can reduce what you do actually need in the first place, so that actually maybe use only one paper bag instead of 5 plastic bags or something. So yeah, recycling is, I mean, it's definitely needed. I think it's a system that has got a lot of room for improvement. I think we're sort of trying to catch up with recycling. We don't really seem to have the right systems in place to manage a lot of the packaging that we do have.
Well, in the UK as well, depending on your postcode or your borough you live in, your recycling bins will be different. So some boroughs, it's just like, put everything in this one. Others, like, separate your food and your plastics and your glass.
Yeah, some will accept plastic lids, some won't. Some don't take any soft plastic. Some will. Yeah, it's crazy trying to keep up. And, you know, we're going to stay with family down in Cornwall sometimes. And when I'm there, I'm like, can we put that in? Is that, do they take paper? Yes, they do. So yeah, it's definitely part of the solution, but I think it's much further down the pecking order as one of the solutions. I think you need to sort of refuse and reduce as much as possible beforehand.
Yeah, because I was saying to you, I thought that I was winning, because when I did my sustainability challenge or habit, I actually went and looked up what can and can't be recycled.
Yeah.
Also, that's eye-opening.
Yeah, it is.
Because it's not what you think.
No, I think there's a lot of like wishful wish cycling or whatever they call it, where you kind of put it in the recycling and you think, oh, I'm sure it'll get recycled if I just put it in there.
But it's jamming the machine.
It's jamming the machine. It's probably contaminating all the other stuff that you've put in there. It is. Oh, it's a very complicated section, recycling, and I even struggle to get my head around a lot of it. So goodness knows how they sort of expect people who aren't even interested in this sort of stuff to fathom it out. And I do think a lot of it is, it's like companies putting the onus on, you know, the public to take responsibility for some packaging choices that they didn't make in the first place.
It's a toughie, the recycle. But then we have two more. So after recycle, we are nearly there. After recycle, what do we have?
We have rot, which is compost, basically. So by composting things, you're returning whatever the resources that went into making that product, so back to the earth. You're closing the loop, and it's actually adding some value. It's becoming some nutrient rich soil amendment for your plants. It's, you know, composting is fantastic, and I think it should be available to everyone, and I don't understand why it isn't, including me. I keep having to bother my council about it. I'm like, can we please get some food recycling? They've started to introduce it into certain areas, but I'm still not in that catchment area. So,
because when I read the book, I was like, maybe I need a worm farm.
Yeah,
and then I thought, no, Emma, you don't.
No, exactly. Check yourself. So I did. I had one for about 4 years in our old apartment because we had a little balcony, and I thought, well, you know, I could just give this a go. Worst case scenario, I'll just sort of, you know, get rid of the worms in the local park or my mother-in-law's garden or something, you know.
Like Andy Dufresne in Shawshank Redemption, just shaking a trouser leg.
Yes. See, I could do that. Nothing suspicious, nothing to see here, folks.
My friend Andy used to shake it. So.
I actually haven't seen it, but I think I've seen a clip of the bit you're talking about.
You haven't seen The Shawshank Redemption?
No.
Okay.
I know.
I'm sorry, but...
I need a life.
The eighth R is redemption, and you need to go home and watch it.
That's brilliant. Composting is... I mean, it's weirdly quite sort of fun to see what you can... Weirdly, it's quite fun. Come on, Kate. What am I going to say? If you're me, it's weirdly a bit of fun. But, you know, you don't have to have a worm bin if that doesn't work for you. If you do have a food waste collection from your council, use it. Like, my brother wasn't using it. And then they started using that service, which they have available to them, and reduced their trash by about 2/3, I think, just because they started putting their food waste in a different bin. And I think you just don't realise how much things like food scraps or eggshells or whatever it is just add up, and they take up volume. And they could easily be going to make compost.
What about waste disposal down the sink? What's the difference?
I've never actually used one. I haven't looked into that myself. So I don't know where it goes. Do you?
Well, I think it just gets whizzed up and filtered through the water supply. I mean, that's my guess. Feeds the alligators in the sewer system.
Do you think? Yeah. The sharks and the alligators down there are like, ooh, what's for supper tonight?
Sorry, guys, it's potato peel.
Yeah. Oh, dang.
No, but that's the kind of thing that can go in your worm farm, isn't it?
Yeah, really easily. Yeah, definitely.
And is it fun because you put it in the top and then you next time you open the lid, it's gone?
It's weirdly satisfying to see it turn. I mean, it's kind of a slow process. And I remember in the early days, the worms tried to escape. I was like, oh, no, I'm doing something wrong here. I opened the lid and they were like all up the sides, like desperate to get away. And I think I'd put in something that's either some weird bit of food that shouldn't go in, or it was too sort of moist in there or something. So it was a quick Google and I fixed it.
Okay.
So as a result of that, I was like, well, maybe, you know, I've got this sort of like compost here. Maybe I could try growing a few herbs, or I've got this little box. There was a space enough on the balcony for a little box. So I was like, I could try and grow a few potatoes in that and see what happens. And that was weirdly satisfying as well, to be able to just know that you could grow those. Not that, you know, they were sort of... we lived off it or anything. It was just kind of fun to see. But we have since moved into a different flat and there's no outside space, so the worm bin has had to go, much to my husband's delight, I think. He never quite got it. But yeah, I think if you can't, no worries, but if you can compost and that's available to you, then try it. There is an app, I think, called Share Waste, which it's kind of limited in the options in London, oddly, but I don't know, maybe across the world there are more available spots. But if you are someone who has a compost, either a pile or you have a collection, and you're happy for people to come and bring some of their compost to you, it's like a sort of matchmaking thing, but through compost. but you can put what you can accept as well, like only vegetable peels or no meat,
because you
scraps
have, again, I'm just thinking out loud. You have tips. So you take, you know, ironing boards, whatever, tip it into, you know, back your car up. I went to my tip recently and going is oddly satisfying. But I just thought, I'm just trying to think, do they have a big old back up your car and
I wish
shove your food waste into a big compost pile?
They have garden waste, which is different. So no food waste there. I think because of, I don't quite know why, but it needs to be handled differently, I imagine. But there is, you know, there's different parts of the world. Like, I think in Japan they do something really interesting where they take food waste and turn it into sort of nutrient-rich pellets or feed for pigs. So you get these like waste-fed pigs, and it kind of closes the loop. You can give them like different flavour profiles and stuff, but it's just really a really clever way that almost mimics nature. But there's a middle man that's turning them into this feed, so it sort of kills off any pathogens or whatever that might be lurking in the food waste. Yeah, it's interesting.
And now finally, this is a good one, because this one I hadn't necessarily even considered.
Ah, this one I added in. So this is the second one that I added.
So you added in repair and...
Repair, and then I added in respond. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that I have found really powerful as just, you know, a member of the public who who sometimes feels like things are out of their hands. To be able to feel like you can respond to a company who has maybe done something brilliant with their product, but you're not a fan of their packaging, just to send them a bit of feedback, not in a ranty way, but in a way that says, you know, I really love you as a brand. I want to continue buying your product, but any chance you'd consider changing the disposable plastic to something that would be either reusable or much easier to recycle. And I hadn't really thought about how impactful responding could be until a friend of mine who works in the fashion industry. And she said an industry insider told her that for every piece of correspondence that a company receives, they imagine the 10,000 other people that think the same thing but haven't bothered to even say anything. So they put a huge amount of... what's the word?
Emphasis on
customer feedback. And I think it's really important to do. And it often, especially in this day and age where you can just do a tweet or a direct message to a company really quickly, or an email. And just, you know, it doesn't take much time. You can do it in a really like friendly way.
Yeah.
And I think if enough people start saying similar things like, oh, would you offer this or you know, could you change that, they start to listen. I think there was a great example on Twitter, it must have been about a year ago, of Pret a Manger, and they were saying how, you know, we hear you, here are the changes we're making. And they showed a lot of the tweets that they were getting from people about their plastic stirrer, coffee stirrer things that
they started off the initiative as well with the cup. I think it was 50p
there you go. So I think they've obviously had a lot of people sort of saying, you know, would you offer a discount for bringing in a reusable? So they sort of showed all of their little tweets and, oh, I don't want to say complaints, but kind of suggested changes. And then they responded saying, we hear you. This is what we're changing on that one. This one's a little bit tricky, but we're still working on it. And I think it was just really nice to see a company sort of saying, OK, we're listening to the feedback here. Let's see what we can do.
That's really nice.
Yeah.
So those are the seven R's.
Yeah.
And I do think when I read the respond, I thought, oh, you're just howling at the moon. These big companies don't actually care. But that's a misconception.
Yeah.
Some of them really do take it seriously. Oh, some don't.
Some don't. But, you know, if you feel like, especially if they're a smaller company and they're probably much more likely to check their emails and want to keep their customers really happy, you know, that one customer means the world to them.
Yeah.
So, you know, if they can make a few tweaks and changes, they're probably more likely to get brilliant word of mouth, you know, people wanting to share the news that this company's made a few changes, you should check them out.
Now, one of the things that you say in the book, which I think is fascinating,
when people say that, I'm like, what did I write again? I can't remember.
I think it was something along the lines of, and I'm paraphrasing, that if you found out that all of the different changes that you were making, if the 7 R's actually weren't contributing hugely to... the waste issue, landfill, etc., you would still live this way.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Just feels right to me. It just feels like, well, why wouldn't I? I never enjoyed just throwing things in a bin, thinking, oh gosh, you know, where's that going to end up? And I think I wouldn't have known this beforehand, but having lived it for like 5, 6, maybe 7 years now, it's just become my new normal. And if someone said, oh, you don't have to worry about it anymore, you can just go back to being how you were before, I don't think I'd actually change much. I wouldn't change anything, I don't think.
Because, I mean, people listening, obviously you have an international audience, but you are a nicely spoken London living woman.
Yeah.
And I think there's... sustainable living kind of has had the same sort of experience as yoga.
Yeah.
It's become the sort of thing that it seems like affluent person's game. Yeah. You know, especially if you've got all... And with yoga, I mean, you know, the people you see walking around looking kitted out in full gear and everything.
With a goat. No, I'm joking.
Yeah. No, there are goats in yoga.
I know, I've heard of goat yoga.
But I... When I was reading this book, I was thinking, okay, I get it, I feel it, I see it, I hear it, I want to be involved in it.
Yeah.
But realistically, is it only for people who have money? Is it an affluent person's game? Because realistically, if I'm already, if I'm going to the supermarket, if I'm really on a budget, yeah, and actually buy one, get one free offers and all that plastic are, yeah, actually are secondary to my main thing, which, yeah, is cost saving.
Exactly, and feeding your family. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Could I still implement what you're talking about, even if we're talking about all of the different sections of the community?
I think you have to do what works for you, mm, for sure. And everyone's got different priorities, but there's nothing to stop that person sort of refusing the receipt at the end of that.
Right.
Purchase. Mm. And then if enough people do that, then it's like, okay, maybe we don't need to automatically print a receipt. Maybe we'll ask people if they want one.
Accountants listening have, yeah, just clenched their buttocks.
yeah, exactly. So I think there is definitely things you can do to to refuse things. You know, it costs nothing to say no thanks to something you don't need.
Yeah.
And I think the whole reuse side of things, like, you know, buying things secondhand is actually often a lot cheaper, and you can get some really good quality things, as a result. I think overall the zero waste lifestyle does encourage you to sort of spend less overall. So people often focus on food. They're like, okay, fine, so the food's more expensive, and for some people it's cheaper, but I've personally found that it is a bit more expensive because I like to buy sort of fresh local seasonal food.
Yeah, so this is organic meat, yeah, fresh cuts, not, yeah, in a packet,
locally sourced, yeah, all that sort of jazz. And for me, I would rather prioritise spending a bit more money on that. Mm. But I look at the things that I'm not buying on a regular basis anymore, sort of magazine subscriptions. Mm. I had four magazine subscriptions beforehand. So that's not happening every month. I'm not buying tinfoil, cling film, kitchen roll, all these little things that kind of add up. So,
but are you using alternatives?
Yes, so that you do have a bit of an upfront cost if you want to have an alternative, but there's nothing to stop you just putting something in a bowl with a plate on top in your fridge. You don't have to go out and buy the beeswax wrap.
Right. I've got some Tupperware.
So again, it's that whole sort of creative side of things. Mm. Yeah, I do think it's probably a heck of a lot easier for people who can afford to do it. Mm. But again, like anything, I think I personally feel if one can, and it, you know, it's not a huge inconvenience, but if you can do something, that then filters down. So if companies start making changes on their packaging because everyone who is able to is sort of behaving differently, then that will just filter down, and everyone will be able to enjoy.
It's part of the bigger picture, isn't it? I think we're all sort of in these linear sort of self-contained little worlds of our own, you know, our phones or whatever it might be, that sometimes we forget that actually if you're doing something, and I remember someone saying this to me years ago, like every time you type in a web address on a computer, 10,000 other people around the planet are doing the same thing, and I'm sure that number's much greater now.
That's crazy.
And it is that thing of actually your action isn't just your action.
Yeah, it's accumulative. Yeah. And I think often leading by, I think there's so many people preaching at other people, like, you should do this, you should do that, you should quit this, don't eat that. And you just think that doesn't actually get you anywhere. And people feel a bit like either guilted or shamed into doing something and they're not really enjoying it. But if you as a person enjoy, I don't know, using a reusable cloth bag or whatever it is that you found that works for you, and your family and friends see you do it, see you get a coffee in your reusable coffee mug or whatever, and they're like, that's cool. Mm. And you got a discount for doing that as well. Where'd you get that cup again? Yeah. Or, you know, or do you think I could bring my own one from home? It's sort of leading by example, I think, is very, very powerful. I can't remember how I got onto that point, but I just wanted to slip it in there.
We were talking about the affluence of it all, and actually and I think that it really does come across the whole time, because the book is called 6 Weeks to Zero Waste, but actually very, very early on, you're like, right, guys, this is, because when I first saw the title, I'm like, oh, balls.
I know.
This is never going to be me. And what you say is, it's not actually about zero waste. It's about getting as close to,
in your world, that works for you. Yeah. And it's not about 6 weeks, really. I mean, it's a catchy title. Mm. My brother actually came up with it. But, you know, it's whether it's 6 weeks, 6 months, 6 years, you know, it could take as long as it has to for you and what's available to you as well. Yeah. So, but, you know, just making some swaps. What I like about the term zero waste personally is that it does encourage you to think, what else could I be doing? It sort of doesn't mean you just go straight to the recycling and that's it, you're done. It kind of goes, well, could I refuse that thing, or could I maybe repair that first before I go and get a new one? And it just has, it has you thinking, oh, What else could I do?
It's breaking that cycle of new, yeah. mine. Like yeah. the single, I always think about Fight Club, you know, the single serving friend.
Again, I haven't seen that, but it's
good to me. Oh, I'm getting you a DVD player.
Thanks, secondhand one.
Something's going on here. Oh, no, not DVD, sorry. Well, streaming service. Oh, we're subscribing fine. You to a streaming service. Toot sweet.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
but the other thing I wanted to, I mean, actually, there's like a million other things I was going to ask you about, sure. but we've already been rattling on for ages. There is a 6-week plan in the book, but one thing that really stood out to me is you talked about the fact that, about your health. And the reason why I want to bring this up is because you've talked about the cleaning product. So it's a really nice link that I would worry that by not using something that was antibacterial, antiseptic, that, you know, had it emblazoned across the bottle and had various chemicals in it, because I trust science, I would worry that maybe you were falling ill, maybe susceptible to bugs. But actually, you in the book say your health has actually never been better.
It's, yeah, exactly. I think we just don't fully understand what sort of burden all of those chemicals are putting on our body in the first place. And often they're all tested in isolation. So they're never really tested in combination in like out in the wider world. And you think about like putting on maybe 15 beauty products and makeup products every morning to your skin. And I think so many people are so conscious about what they're putting into their bodies, and, you know, eating organic food or clean eating, etc. But they don't really think so much about what they're putting on their bodies. And then also, like, the room fragrance that's sitting in the corner is what's that giving off? So it definitely opened my eyes to all of that. And
that, okay, so we could go on for another hour, because you've just touched on clean beauty, which I have a real position on, which is everything's a chemical. And I think it's really, it's scaremongering at its worst, actually.
Yeah. I think the term chemical is also really, sort of, again, means different things to different people.
Water's a chemical.
Exactly. Water's a chemical. But
with the detergents and things like that. Like
cleaning products. I mean, they're so strong, some of them, you know, and you've got these huge warnings on the back, like, do not inhale, do not touch your skin.
Yeah,
this is lethal to wildlife if, you know, if poured in, you know, get the dead fish sign on the back. So, you know, there's definite warning signs there.
But I know we've talked about compromise, but when you've sort of pulled it back and you've gone for a more natural approach with, like, was it not white wine vinegar? White vinegar.
You can use white wine vinegar. Whatever works for you.
Thinking of that tonight's dinner. You haven't felt that your overall cleanliness has been compromised.
Not at all. And going on to health wise, I personally feel, I now notice I get a headache if I'm around a very strong scent that's synthetic. Health wise, I used to get sort of, it's a whole other topic, but I used to get sort of like colds and things quite regularly, and personally I don't, but I'm not putting it that down to just the zero waste lifestyle. I just think as a whole it's just made me much more aware, and I think it's good to just be aware of how many things we're exposing ourselves to on a daily basis. It's quite a cocktail of things in combination, really.
And the values, sort of to close it off, like, as much as you have your own values and how you like to live, and this is very much about creating and working within some sort of structure that makes you feel more comfortable about your consumption and then what you're throwing away and how you're really using things in a very materialistic, consumption-heavy world.
Yeah.
But it's also, it feels like there's a real parallel to you're very mindful of what you're doing as a member of the community of the planet.
Yeah, do your bit.
Yeah,
as and when you can. I think like if I go to the beach and I see a bunch of like wastes literally like on the waterline waiting to be lapped up, I'll think, oh gosh, I'm gonna pick that up because selfishly it'll make me feel better. But also, you know, you see a seagull eyeing it up and think, well, actually maybe you shouldn't have that for lunch. So yeah, and you know, if one can, and you know, it's, you know, within your means, things switching to things like a clean energy supplier. You do it once and then you forget about it. And you know, for a lot of people that is something that they can do, but they haven't really thought to do it.
And I guess it must be pretty easy to find out if an energy supplier is clean.
I think there's guides online as well. You can check out. There are a couple that, I mean, I'm with Good Energy. They are very transparent about where their energy comes from, but Bulb is another good one. You know, there are different ones out there, but again, depending on your budget and whatever, it doesn't have to be perfect. I think that's the message I want to get to people, is like, it doesn't have to be like the cleanest, best, you know, most eco-friendly option out there, just slightly better than before. That's the name of the Gretchen Rubin book. Better than before.
So with all of the R's, essentially, you could make a 1% change.
Oh yeah.
But actually, cumulatively.
Yeah, and it does. I think it does. It all adds up, but it also encourages you to feel like, oh, that was really easy. What was I even thinking? You know, worried about?
Yeah.
I could make another swap, maybe, and it does become slightly encouraging, I think, especially if you start with something that is a very easy swap, that is almost a no-brainer, and then it builds your confidence. You're like, okay, well, I've done that. I could maybe do something else. And I think again, you don't have to be like the most perfect zero waste living individual on the planet, but just I think showing some effort that feels comfortable can actually feel really good.
And actually, just reading the book and actually seeing how to do things, even like recycling. Just means that even that can be the change, because you'll just be recycling better than you were before.
Some people don't.
Like. Exactly.
Yeah.
This is brilliant. Thank you so, so much.
Pleasure.
Obviously, listeners, I'll put the link to Kate in the show and the book in the show notes, but this has been such an education. Thank you so much.
Pleasure chatting with you. Thanks.
Thank you so much for listening. I really hope you enjoyed that conversation with Kate and I. I really came away from it. I really came away from her blog and her book feeling like I could make these changes. And I hope that in listening to her, they do seem accessible, because that's what I think, that's what I feel the magic is about Kate, is that she's made something that can seem a bit lofty, a bit worthy, a bit too much like hard work. I think she's just made it accessible and easy, and just something that you feel like you could actually try today. So I hope that that's what you got too. If you've got any comments or feedback about the podcast, I would love to hear it. You can email me at thebeautypodcast@gmail.com, or you can slide into my DMs on Instagram and Twitter, where I'm at Emma Guns. I genuinely love to hear from you. And I know that it's gone down very well that I've been reading out some of the feedback emails, so I will be doing a bit more of that. So if you want to hear your email on the show or your DM on the show, you just have to get in touch. If you want to speak to me, but also thousands of other listeners to this podcast, then I highly advise that you click the link in the show notes, which can be found wherever it is that you are streaming and downloading this episode, and you join the Facebook forum. There are thousands of other listeners to this podcast in that group, buoying each other up, offering helpful advice, asking questions, whether it's about skincare, whether it's about the environment, whether it's about work issues, whatever it might be. We've got some really wide-ranging forum chats going on right now, and we would love you to be a part of it. So do click that link and do join. If you get a chance, I would be super grateful if you could leave a 5-star review and maybe a couple of sentences about what you have enjoyed about this episode or any other episode of the podcast. It really helps a podcast like mine stand out on the massive podcast platforms that you are listening to this episode on. Thank you once again for your time. It's always a pleasure to spend it with you. I will see you on the next one.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.